Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
It is indeed Inside the Clubhouse. I'm Matt Spiegel. He's Bruce Levine on a glorious Saturday morning here in Chicago. The Cubs and the Sox have their seasons done, but the playoffs roll on. The Final Four is set. It's the Dodgers and the Braves in the NLCS. And the Tampa Rays got by the Yankees against the Houston Astros in the ALCS. And Bruce, our next guest, joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park.
The very accomplished baseball player, broadcaster, all-around man for all seasons, Jim Cott, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. And Jim, welcome to the show. Matt and I appreciate you coming on. And also, does baseball get any better than watching that game last night and seeing a kid from obscurity coming through from Northwest Indiana, hitting the biggest home run of his life, one of the biggest in Tampa Ray history, to win that ball game? It's surely the beauty of the game, isn't it?
Boy, you're spot on with the beauty of the game, Bruce, because I was watching that game, and it really wasn't very exciting. It was walks, strikeouts, and then they had the two home runs, but there weren't a lot of base runners. But yet I think the beauty of the game for the real baseball fan is kind of the tug of what's the outcome going to be? Who's going to be the hero? You know, the drama builds and builds, and you know what's coming down to just, you know, one play, one guy, and it was just poetic justice to see what happened a month ago when Chapman buzzed a 100-mile-an-hour fastball over Mike Brosseau's head, and then he turns around and gets a home run. Yeah, that was and I love teams like Tampa because they're not a high payroll team, and they do little things, and it points out the importance of the bullpen in the game today. It's all bullpen. I mean, Gerrit Cole, Glass, you know, they're Glass now, the big hard throwing starters, they are all a hype about them. You know, they're not going to be around in the sixth inning, so it's going to come down to the bullpen. And nobody has more power arms than Tampa coming out of that bullpen.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable how teams work their pitching staffs these days, isn't it, Jim? We saw Jace Tingler of the Padres have a full-on bullpen game to get out of their divisional round series, and it worked. You've got, just the boldness and the willingness of managers to do this and the flexibility. What would it be like to be a pitcher today and just have to know that sometimes three innings is all you're going to get? Sometimes if you're a reliever, you got to be ready at all different times. It's a different kind of mindset than just knowing you're going to get to go out there every fourth or fifth day.
You know, Johnny Sain, who you know well, knew well, Johnny told me back in the 60s, he said, the day is coming when if you don't have a fourth starter, now they go to five starters, but four starter, they're going to split the game up between three guys. And he said, the day is coming when a pitcher that can go out and pitch one clean inning is going to be valuable. I said, John, you got to be kidding me. You mean you just go out there and have one, two, three inning and you're valuable? But that is the game today. And I experienced a bit of that in 1982 being with the Cardinals when we won the World Series. Very fortunate to be on that team. But Whitey Herzog had told me the winter prior to that, he said, I want you to be my lefty-lefty guy. And he said, I'm going to build my pitching staff from the ninth inning back. We got Bruce Sutter. We had Doug Bear, who's a hard-throwing righty. Jeff Lottie had a good slider. I was a lefty-lefty guy, and that was our team within the team. And, of course, we won the World Series, and we did it. I think I was just a very minor part of that, but we did it because of the way our bullpen was put together.
Jim Cott joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. Jim, 25 years pitching in the big leagues, 283 wins, and now a broadcaster for the last 35 years. Jim, when you look at the career of Whitey Ford, a guy that as a young man you pitched against one-on-one in some pretty intense games when you were with Minnesota and Whitey was finishing up the last 5 or 6 years of his historic career, what comes to mind? How many personal, you know, situations did you have? How much relationship did you have with Whitey?
I could probably use up your next hour with it. You know, my first really thrill, and it's kind of a self-serving story, but in 1960, when the Twins were then the Washington Senators, we hadn't moved to Minnesota, so my first start in Yankee Stadium, I think it was the third start of my career, was against the Yankees in Whitey. And in those days, the starting pitchers warmed up next to home plate by the on-deck circles, and they warmed up toward the backstop, so fans could watch the starters warm up. So about 20 feet to my left, I'm looking at, I said, I am pitching against Whitey Ford. You know, I'm looking at that number 16, and it was a surreal experience for me. Fortunately, we won that game. But then the real story that I love to tell is in 1962, we hooked up in Metropolitan Stadium in Minnesota. And the bullpens there are very close together. They're separated by a chain link fence, maybe 20 feet apart. And as Whitey and I were warming up, I could actually hear the spin on his fastball. I could hear his moving, sinking fastball rotate. You know, he wasn't a power pitcher. It wasn't like today where you're looking for guys throw 96 miles an hour. And so I said to myself, I wonder what Whitey would say if I walked over to the fence and said, would you mind showing me how you hold your fastball? Because the pitcher's union was always much tighter knit than the hitter's union because they didn't do much to legislate in our favor. So sure enough, it was a warm day. Whitey was wiping his brow, and I went over and I said, Whitey, would you mind showing me how you grip your fastball? And he took about 30 seconds, was nice enough to, you know, there's the with the seam, or nowadays they call it two seam or four seam. And he had this sort of a diagonal way, put his fingers across the ball diagonally. He showed me the grip. I went back, finished my warm-up, and I threw my fastball like that for the next 21 years. So, and then fast forward to, Yankees old-timers games, and then down in Florida, he was a silent partner of a golf club that I played golf at. So we crossed paths quite a bit. I have a wonderful picture that we had taken together in 2010, which was the 50th anniversary of my first game against him in 1960. So, and he's such a humble guy, great sense of humor, and fun to be around. And so I just cherish those memories I have to be able to say I was a friend of one of, you know, the all-time greats, particularly one of the all-time great Yankees.
So cool. He was a Yankee fan since he was 5 years old, Jim Cott. So, you know, it's in reading about him, and I wish I had seen more of him and watched some of him, because the kinds of pitchers I love, be it Zach Greinke now or David Cohn, 15, 20 years ago, guys who threw a bunch of different pitches but would throw from different arm angles at different speeds and would really just have a lot of different tools in the bag. It seems like Whitey Ford was that guy with a big variety and a lot of different speeds and arm motions and great control. Must have been awfully fun to watch that kind of pitcher, Jim.
Yeah, in those days, pitchers were mainly fastball, curveball. If there's one pitch I wish I had, and I tell Johan Santana, the former great Twins pitcher, Cy Young Award winner, I said, boy, If there's one pitch I wish I would have had during my career, it's a changeup. That's become a very useful pitch, as hard as pitchers throw. But Whitey was sinking fastball, curve. He could change speeds on his curve. He had an excellent pickoff move. And then when Johnny Sane was the Yankee coach, you know, up until then, Jim Turner was the coach, and Whitey was starting about 30 games a year. They just kind of spotted him against the better teams. And then Johnny said to Ralph Houck, well, if Whitey Ford's your best pitcher, wouldn't our chances be better if he went to the mound 40 times a year instead of like 32? And so that's when they went to the four-man rotation, and Whitey went 25-4. In fact, I think he won 20 games three of the next 4 years. And, of course, as you know from knowing Johnny, wherever he went, he promoted a four-man rotation and developed usually a 20-game winner or two every year. But that's when Whitey became really a, you know, a Cy Young Award winner and more of a complete game pitcher than he was in the early part of his career.
Jim Codd joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. We're here with you every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball from 9 to 11. Jim, the Bulls, doing the game, the Atlanta game on MLB Network the other day, and talking about that you were not too happy about the one rule, and that is a pitcher has to pitch to three batters or finish an inning to be able to come out of the game. Just your thoughts on that from being the accomplished pitcher that you were over the years and seeing how bullpens are used and managers having this taken away from them as far as strategy and at least in postseason.
Yeah, it's probably a little selfish on my part because that's how I got to be part of a World Series team. I was a lefty-lefty guy. I did face a few righties. But, no, I remember the day the rule came out, and the next day I was at a golf club where I play with he was part of the commissioner's office, and he's the guy that actually hired me at MLB Network, Tony Petitti. And I came in the locker room and I said, Tony, I heard about this rule. The pitcher, reliever has to face three hitters. I said, that's the stupidest rule I've ever heard. And of course he said, well, don't say too much about it because it was my idea. I said, no, come on. You played college baseball. You were a catcher. You're strapping a manager's hands. Now the game I did the other day, Atlanta got out of it, but O'Day was struggling. And he walked two guys, and now I know Brian Snitker would love to have made a pitching change because Matt Joyce was coming up with the bases loaded. And O'Day got him out, but that's not going to happen all the time. So I just think instead of some of these little Mickey Mouse rules that they've come up, you can't go to the mound six times or you can't hit the second base, but if they just, or the catcher, you know, it's become a sort of a soft sport. Why don't they just shorten the game to seven innings and leave the rest of it alone? No starter goes more than seven. And a fan's attention span's about 2.5 hours. It now takes 2:20, 2:30 to play a seven-inning game, which is what we played in that amount of time or even quite a bit faster. And I just think that players would be fresher. There wouldn't be as many injuries. You wouldn't have to carry as many inexperienced pitchers that, not because they're lack of talent, but they're really not ready to pitch in the big leagues yet, and they rush them up there. I just think the quality of the game would be so much better, and you wouldn't have to spend time saying, well, let's make a reliever face three hitters. It'll speed up the game by 35 seconds or something. I just think it's a ridiculous rule to – and Buck Showalter said to me the other day on TV – now tell me how you really feel about it. You know? So I said, "Well, Buck, what if you're in the dugout and this situation is happening and you're the manager?" See, most of the managers, Tony La Russa sent us a text. They all feel the same way, but you know, everybody doesn't want to, you know, be outspoken against the baseball administration. But I have no problem with that because I'm just looking out for the best of the game, for the game to be the best it can be, and that rule prevents that.
And you're a made guy, you know, Jim Cott. He's a made guy, Bruce. He can say whatever the hell he wants.
Well, not only that, but you know, for a guy that's in his 80s now to talk about being progressive and yes, going away from seven innings, here's a guy that that pitched 180 complete games. Is that right, Jim?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of another issue that's sort of sad for baseball, is that these pitchers they're so much more talented than we were. The talent level's at an all-time high, and all these shifts and analytics information, they're kind of hothousing the talent. They're stifling what a lot of these pitchers and players could be if they were just set free, and that we'd see more complete games, and we'd see more head-to-head matchups where, say, Gerrit Cole was going against, say, a John Lester in his prime for 7 innings. We'd see him around at the finish that we love to do, but we don't see it anymore.
Hey, Jim, I love, as Bruce says, your progressiveness, your openness to some change. I was talking to John Bugshambi, the ESPN broadcaster, last night on this station, and he was mentioning the 7-inning thing that you talked about. He also mentioned just kind of picking up the pace a little bit, forcing the pitch clock, really for both the pitchers and the hitters, because his idea is that the faster you go, the less you get this like maximum effort on every pitch from every pitcher, and maybe we'll get some more contact, because that's the big thing, right? Is like 76% of the runs in the Yankees Rays series were on home runs, and then there were also like 95 strikeouts. So it's like 40% of the outcomes like didn't have the ball in play. So how do we get the ball in play more is the thing.
Well, I'd say you could soften the ball, regulate the bat. You could bring back the brushback pitch. Bob Gibson, who recently passed away, was an intimidating pitcher. I was not an intimidating pitcher, maybe a little in my younger days. I hit more batters than Bob Gibson did. But what Bob Gibson did is he said, I threw inside to push the hitter off the plate so I could pitch outside and keep him from diving in. Well, see, that pitch has gone away, because if you use it, you'll get warned and kicked out of the game. And very subtly, that's a pitch that is a big part of a pitcher's arsenal, and they're not allowed to use it anymore. So, and I think you soften the ball, and, you know, in golf, we tigerize courses by making them longer. In baseball, the hitters are stronger. You can't regulate the human body. They're bigger, stronger, faster, swing lighter, drier bats, laminated, and a harder ball, and we make the park smaller. The Judge home run last night was a routine fly ball that just drifted and went out of the ballpark for a home run, and it's kind of making the home run ordinary, where I think years ago, the way the game was designed to play, the home run was pretty special, and I'm an old fogey about that, but I don't really know how many young fans we're really keeping in the game, because it's kind of boring to see 40% of the at-bats be walks, strikeouts, or home runs.
You bet. Hey, Jim, in closing, Matt and I really appreciate your time and love your broadcast when you're out there. We really, I personally think you're still great at what you do. How did you stay in Major League Baseball for 25 years, and how essential were your legs? I did some scouting on you, and I heard that you used to run 5 miles a day religiously for good parts of your career when you weren't pitching that day. Was it all about the legs for you, and was that what the longevity was for pitchers back then?
Running was part of what we were told to do early on, and then, you know, eventually you get sore legs, sore back. And so, especially with Johnny saying he was a big believer in throwing. And I did. I used to run the golf course where I lived in Florida for a while. I did a lot of distance running. But then when stationary bikes came along, I did more of that. You know, and that's the fallacy of the pitch count, is that everybody says, well, we're protecting the pitcher's arm. We're going to limit him to 100 pitches. Well, it's not the arm that goes in the seventh inning, it's the legs. Buck Showalter and I were talking about that off camera the other day. When you look at the great power pitchers, say Tom Seaver, Roger Clemens, they all had big lower halves, you know, thick legs, big butts, and that was a great foundation. So, you know, that's really important to keep those in shape. And unlike, I think, some of the training in those days, Johnny Sain was influential in that, is the best way to condition your legs is to pitch more. Like in spring training, I might pitch 7 innings in a spring training game, and then I would go down to the bullpen and pitch 4 simulated innings, not at full speed, but I would use my legs and drive my legs just like I did with my pitching motion during the game. And I think that's where we're doing a disservice to today's pitchers is even in the minor leagues, you know, they don't get a chance to pitch out of jams, 50 pitches, 60 pitches, four innings. Okay, that's enough. Come out of the game. You never really knew. You never get a chance to really develop your craft with the potential that you have to be a successful pitcher.
Jim, you're right. We could talk for hours, and it would be fascinating. Let's do it again sometime soon. Thanks so much for joining us on our show, and all the best to you. It's just fabulous talking baseball with you.
Well, I enjoyed it. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Jim Cott, the fabulous pitcher. Still don't know why 283 wins don't get you in the Hall of Fame. He doesn't like to talk about it because he has no control over it. But what a fabulous analyst and honest guy he is. Man of the times, Jim Cott.
Love it. On his game at 81 and open to some of these ideas, these crazy ideas that maybe are not so crazy to try and improve the watchability.
I love seven innings.
I think
we saw it. We saw it this year for the first time, right?
Yeah, and the doubleheaders.
Those were complete. Those are games you'll look back in the record book and see seven inning complete games played by Major League Baseball.
A lot there to chew on, and you can do it at 312-644-6767. That's the phone number to call and to text right here on 670 The Score. We will continue that conversation, and let's hear from Ozzie Guillen. Now, Ozzie Guillen was on with Mully and Haw. When we come back, you'll hear that as part of the show. It's Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Listening to 670 The Score, it is Inside the Clubhouse with me, Matt Spiegel, and him, Bruce Levine. Bruce, Ozzie Guillen on this radio station often these days, often with Mully and Haw, and he had quite a good year for the public profile, wouldn't you say? The White Sox were interesting, they were very watchable, they were fun, and Ozzie and Frank Thomas made a real good pair of analysts for some very compelling games, and they had a manager who made a lot of moves that were open to question, and Ozzie was active and interesting.
Yeah, he was. I don't think he went as far as saying, you know, he wouldn't do this if he was a manager, or that Ricky Renteria shouldn't be managing the White Sox, but I think he was very candid about being able to share his thoughts on when things work out, when they don't. It's a very tough job, as he knows, and he would very much like to be back in a dugout after not being there for almost 10 years now.
Yeah, let's hear him with Mully and Haw earlier in the week as he was talking about the manager openings that I'm sure will come, and the White Sox were a subtext of it in terms of what they decided to do with Ricky Renteria, but they were not the focus. The question was, do Alex Cora and A.J. Hinch deserve another chance to manage in the big leagues?
Man, you know, Alex is my son. Alex is my son. A.J., I don't know him. I think he's a great baseball man. But that made me sad, man. That made me sad because all the son, I hear his name. I'm my name's not mentioned because what? Really? They're not better manager than me. Sorry. I don't care. They're not better manager than me. But hey, second chance? Everybody has second chance. Everyone besides me. Everyone deserves second chance. And they hopefully they learn from the mistake. And I'm glad they mentioned them. But sometimes not fair because few people deserve to be there before they did, at least even mention their name. But that's the way it is, man. You know what I mean? I'm glad. You know what I mean? Alex Cora is my son. AJ Hinch is a group baseball man. But what they did, well, I don't know if they did or not, what they was involved, it made me think about where Major League Baseball going. What we're thinking. Some people, you know what I mean, do less and they have less opportunity. But I hope they get the job, man. I hope they go out there and get the job with Major League Baseball. That's nothing I can control. I don't worry about it. But it made me sad because how those guys got a second opportunity to manage it and a lot of people, including myself, we don't. That's a good shock.
Boy, there's a
why
lot,
do you
there.
Think,
lot
yeah,
there to chew
Matt,
on. Go ahead, Bruce. Yeah, go ahead.
Why do you think Ozzy has not gotten another chance?
I think that the perception is because of some things he has said.
10 years
well.
Ago. 10 years ago.
Well, no, I don't think it's the controversy part of it. Where I was going was that I think the perception is that Ozzy is not a believer in analytics and would be a difficult partner for a front office, right. And that's what the role has become.
It's not true, of course, but I understand you sharing the perception that it might be that. I just think that Ozzy, to me, Ozzy's one of the most honest people I've ever met in my life, outside of baseball, in baseball. He will tell you what he thinks. But I do think the important thing for baseball people to notice is that Ozzy has learned how to control what he says. And he has learned a lot, as he said, by watching the game and how other people manage not only the games, but manage themselves. And Ozzy, great baseball player, great baseball man, deserves a chance more than just about anybody I know out there. He's still a young man. He still has tremendous things to offer. He's bilingual in a time where that is essential for a lot of jobs because you have almost 40% Latin American players in the game. So from all of that, do you think the guy would even get an interview? I mean, I don't even think he's gotten an interview. And he doesn't want token interviews. He wants people that are interested in hiring. But I don't know how you go from a world championship manager and a guy that runs games beautifully to not getting another chance 10 years later.
Well, what is there? What do you think it is, Bruce? Is it the fact that
I'm sure the perception is here's a guy that talks a lot, and you know, he would be hard to control, just like you said. And I think that's very far from the truth. I think the relationship between Kenny Williams and Ozzy for 95% of the time that they were there was outstanding. The communication was great. And they worked together beautifully, building very good clubs. The other 5%, when those things weren't working out, they were sensationalized to the point where, hey, you know, one guy and the other is they're both looking for the attention of the owner, and the relationship kind of fell apart at that point. So from the perspective of Ozzy as a baseball man, I don't think there's anybody that can question what he would bring to the party. I think he'd be fabulous, and given another chance, I think he'd be great. But again, I haven't hired a manager in a long time, Matt, so it's probably not. But I do hope it happens, and And people are missing the boat when they do not pay attention to Ozzie Guillen as a baseball man.
I guess I wonder, Bruce, if he would be open. I'm recalling a couple articles and the way that Ozzie talked about what his son's responsibilities were in the Houston Astros organization, of how much analytics he had to look at, the volume of binders and materials he had to know. And I remember Ozzie saying something like, man, I wouldn't last a day doing that. And that's the gig. That's the gig these days. You can't farm that out these days. Every manager has to do it. So, I think that's the perception that I'm talking about. But you talk to more people. You think the perception of him being difficult is more than the issue?
Just too effusive. You know, talking too much. You know, slow him down. They don't understand the essence of what a high quality individual, a person, and baseball man he is. They have no idea, okay? This is a great family guy. This is a friend that I've had since 1985 that if I needed $1,000 in 2 minutes, I'd have it. You know, this is a guy with a big heart, you know, loves his family, his friends. But because he's an aggressive individual, he's just not looked at properly at this point in time. And I don't know if he'll get a chance.
Yeah, well, that's too bad if that's the issue. It really is. A texter here and several people getting in at 312-644-6767. You can call or you can text. It's the same number these days. No owner wants to deal with a tone-deaf manager. His time with the Marlins was incredibly unaware of the impact his words have on the organization. He's clearly a loose cannon, has nobody to blame but himself. I really don't think that issue that happened in Miami is a big part of it. I don't think that
Well, it was at the time. I mean, it certainly set him back and, it made things difficult for him to stay on the job. But more importantly, the essence of what he was as a manager, I think, was lost. The fact that when you talk to baseball people and they say nobody got outmanaged. Ozzie never got outmanaged by anybody else. He was that good. But because he was multifaceted as far as personality and having fun, and he could look in the stands and be talking to fans or looking at people and still be managing and doing a great job at the same time. You know, he's just different. He's different. This time in life and in baseball, I think we embrace difference, don't we? So I think, people are missing out on a fabulous baseball guy, a guy that is so well connected in the game. There's hundreds and hundreds of players that are well connected to Ozzie that would love to play for him. So I don't get it. But, perception from 10 years ago is reality for some of these owners and general managers that have not interviewed Ozzie for jobs.
I'll never forget a moment during the Cubs Sox at Wrigley. I guess it was last year when Ozzie was there. And on the field pregame, and the treatment as royalty that he received from, at the time, Carlos Gonzalez, Wilson Contreras, guys of Venezuelan descent, and there's a lot of them in MLB. Just the reverence they have for Ozzie is pretty remarkable, and obviously incredibly valuable. I wonder if among the bits of perception out there, just what happened, the ugliness with his. His kids vocally going against the White Sox at the time, how wrong that rubbed Jerry Reinsdorf, how vocal Jerry might have been at the time, I don't know, towards other owners. I know that Jerry carries a lot of weight and is a very powerful voice among owners around MLB.
He's working for a television station that broadcasts all the White Sox games.
Yep.
I'm sure, I don't think Jerry stood in his way from doing that. Was the relationship fractured for a long period of time after he left? Yes, it was. Has it been taken care of, and are they on good terms these days over the last 3 years or so? Yes, indeed it has. I can tell you that, firmly tell you that's the case. But did it hurt him that he left here on bad terms? I think it did. You know, it definitely hurt him. And but 10 years is 10 years. You know, the guy is only 54 years old. He's got another 10 years of good baseball to offer at the very least. And I think some of it's wasted on the fun color commentary that he does
on the pre and post game shows. He's just too valuable to just be in a booth. He needs to be in a dugout somewhere.
It's an incredibly strong personality and a fascinating personality. And a lot of times teams are afraid to deal with it. We'll see if he gets another shot. It's Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. More of your texts and calls the rest of the way as Bruce Levine and me, Matt Spiegel, continue right here on 670 The Score. Mark Grody and Steve Rosenblum at the top of the hour. This segment on The Score is brought to you by Amazon. Welcome back in on 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel here with you and Bruce Levine, of course. It is Inside the Clubhouse on The Score. Bruce, Final Four here, the Rays and the Astros and the Braves and the Dodgers. The Dodgers and the Rays have been the two best teams in baseball for most of the year. You think that's what we'll get at this point? I hope so.
I think so. I expect it to continue because what do they have? I think they both have the best pitching, okay? So they have good offenses. They can score a bunch of runs, but they can outpitch you in tight games. And I think that's why it could be a fabulous World Series Dodgers versus the Tampa Rays. Now, that said, Atlanta has pitched tremendously in the playoffs. What have they got four shutouts so far. Hardly allowed any runs. But the quality of the opponent's going to be a little different now with the Dodgers. So most people still perceive the Dodgers being the best team in baseball. I just love Tampa and their bullpen. Matt, they had 12 different individuals, 12 different guys save games for them in 2020. Incredible. And you see these power arms. You see guys like last night, with these guys coming out of the pen, and it's just like, how do you hit that? It's almost impossible. So I really like that. Yourself, what are you looking at here?
Yeah, a lot of those points are spot on. In looking for a weakness with the Dodgers, it's hard to find one. The only thing is they do not have big strikeouts at the end of their bullpen at the end of games.
Yeah.
With Kenley Jansen and even some of the guys who've been good, like Brewster Gratterall, is not a big strikeout guy. I think he's 5 strikeouts per 9, something like that. So, but the way that managers have had to be desperate as well as creative and make it work has just been fascinating. Boy, karmically, I just really, really don't want the Astros to go back to the World Series.
I don't get it.
Really?
No, I don't get it.
Oh,
I mean,
They're so unrepentant. Carlos Correa saying,
"What would should they do? They do Hail Marys before every game?
No,
What do you want them to be doing?
Yeah, I want them to not try to slam dunk on people when they win. To not use, like, the fact that people were angry at them as some kind of rallying cry. We had a right to be angry at you. They've been unrepentant every step of the way. It's very unseemly.
I don't blame those players. You know why? Because Major League Baseball refused to punish them. Okay? And when Major League Baseball decided to take the intel from them rather than punish them and get them to, own up to what they had done, They missed the opportunity to be able to punish them for what they had done. They gave them immunity. So this is a Major League Baseball problem. So I don't punish those players, because if Major League Baseball took a pass on punishing them and they're out there, I think you just let them play the game. And to their credit, not a very good team during the regular season, 29-30. They have risen to the occasion, and that offense is a scary offense right now. So I'm not rooting for them necessarily to win, but I'm not rooting against them, and I'm thinking that I'm watching from purely the baseball part, not the these guys are jerks and they cheated. You know, there's been thousands of guys that have cheated in sports and in baseball over the years, not got caught. So I'm not hung up on that. What I'm hung up on is that baseball had the opportunity to punish them, they didn't.
Yeah,
so
no, let's I
move
understand.
On. So let's move on.
Well, there's very few things that I allow myself to be emotionally passionate about in sports. And when I do have some things that I allow myself to be emotionally passionate about, then you're not going to talk me out of it, Bruce Levine. If it was...
That's fine.
If it was the
Yankees, I enjoyed... You know, yeah. I was the guy that enjoyed watching the Pistons play. I mean, I thought the Pistons were great because they were spot on perfect as to the type of basketball they wanted to play.
Okay. They executed it well. They did
perfectly.
It well, and they didn't mind being disliked. They
no,
really...
and they were excellent. Besides some goonish behavior, they were tremendous basketball players. You know, Isaiah Robertson. You're talking
Isaiah
about
Thomas,
Isaiah Thomas. I'm getting in football and basketball mix. Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars. You know, these are two of the greatest basketball players that ever played. Nobody even talks about Joe Dumars with that team, but that was one of the exceptional players of all time. My point is, you know, if you do something and you do it well, you should be commended, whether they like you or not. To me, I watch wrestling for that.
There's a difference between dirty and cheating. Isn't there
That's
a difference
wrestling.
Between dirty and cheating, though? Those
no,
things are
you
different.
Don't think other guys have cheated?
Of course they have. But these guys got caught. These guys got absolutely caught.
Yes, you're right. And they're showing no contrition for it. I understand that.
Yeah,
I do understand
I'll say this.
That.
I'll say this. I did not bank on a Joe Dumars reference on Inside the Clubhouse today. I didn't feel
Isaiah
that
Isaiah Robertson or Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, you pick an Isaiah. It's
one of my favorite linebackers of all time, Isaiah Thomas, right?
Isaiah Robertson, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'll say this for the Astros. Even without the added benefit of the trash cans and everything, they still strike out very little. For a team that slugs a lot, they don't strike out a lot.
I'll
it's
end
amazing.
It this way. If George Springer is available for one of the teams that you root for here in Chicago, would you not want him to be a part of that going forward, knowing he's a free agent this year?
He's an interesting free agent too, isn't he? I'm looking forward to the winter that we'll have, Bruce, and talking about big-time decisions for both sides of town. Is James McCann a done deal as a goner? Where will he go?
He's gone.
Yeah, I wonder.
But I'll give you some good news. According to Jake Meisner, who writes on an interesting website, Tommy La Stella is coming back to the Cubs.
I would not be surprised at that at all.
No. He's a contact guy.
Yep.
He's shown some power since he left the Cubs. Mm-hmm. They will be going after guys that make contact. Hey, we have people to thank, Matt.
We do. Thank you so much to everyone who called and listened and texted. And thank you to our guest today, Larry Young, the MLB umpire supervisor, and the great Jim Cott from MLB Network, who was a lot of fun at the top of the hour. Thank you to Adam Studzinski for doing a great job producing as well.
People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Also on our website, 670thescore.com, where I write baseball for both Chicago teams all winter long. Matt, have a great week. Talk to you next week.
You too, Bruce. Thanks so much. I'm in Monday, I should say. Monday, it's me and Danny Parkins from 2 to 4, and then me and Dan Bernstein from 4 to 6 on Monday. Looking forward to that. Mark Grody and Steve Rosenblum are next right here on 670 The Score. Have a great day, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.